I want to disturb and disrupt people so that they see something fresh. And whether that be, you know, faith, whether that be politics, whether that be, you know, whatever it may be, parenting, I'm here to disrupt in the most grace-filled way.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests that attempt to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if this played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does Hope Still Win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I'm sitting down with another host on That Sounds Fun Network. Heck yes. He's a culture disruptor and self-proclaimed hope dealer, which means we're big fans of him around here. And I think you will be too if you haven't guessed it yet. Yes, this week's guest is Carlos Whitaker. Carlos is a People Choice Award winner and former recording artist, a social media maven where he disrupts on a daily basis. Author, speaker, and host of the brand new podcast, Human Hope. I asked Carlos why he chooses to be a culture disruptor, and he responded, to help myself as well as others see something with fresh eyes. Come on now. Carlos has a unique way of challenging us to go deeper while expanding what we know to be true, and I cannot wait for you to learn alongside me this week in this week's episode of Hope Still Wins with Carlos Whitaker. I've never met a man like Carlos who has challenged societal norms while simultaneously filling a room with an immense amount of love and support. It's pretty impressive. It's an art, and I truly believe we can all learn and become a little better by spending some time with him. So let's jump into this week's conversation with Carlos Whitaker. Here it is on Hope Still Wins. Carlos, it is an honor to have you here. Thanks for joining Hope Still Wins.
Bro, I can't believe I'm on your Hope. We're both like hopeful podcasters here.
Same network. That sounds fun. Carlos, before we got going, I was telling you we met at MomCon a few years ago. We got to play a game on stage. And I remember, I mean, there's a lot of people. I think like Bob Goff was there and you were there. A few others were speaking. And you did your talk and you came off stage. And I was like, I just got to go tell him that. That was incredible. And so I walked over and told you that, not knowing then a few minutes later, you and I would be on stage dancing around. I forget. It was like a scavenger hunt type game. Yeah.
I don't know what was happening, but there was a lot of moms screaming and laughing, and it was tons of fun.
Yeah. It's a wild event for so many reasons, but we're not here to talk about MomCon. Carlos, we're here. You have a lot going on in your life. And I was prepping for this and thinking through like what direction, should we take this interview? And one of the things that that stood out to me is on your website, you describe yourself as a disruptor. And I want to know why. Like, and why was that the word you chose? Why is that word important to you? And then what do you hope to disrupt?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I love to watch people grow. And absolutely nothing grows without disruption, right? I mean, think of a seed, right? You stick a seed in the ground, well, it actually has to like crack open, and in order for it to grow, and the more I remember when I actually came up with that word, not came up with myself, but said that's what I wanted to be. I want to disturb and disrupt people so that they see something fresh is really my goal. So I disturb and disrupt for the sake of people seeing things fresh again, and whether that be, you know, faith, whether that be politics, whether that be race, whether that be, you know, whatever it may be, parenting, I want to make sure that people are disturbed and disrupted, because nobody grows on vacation, right? We only grow when vacation is important, but that's not when we grow. And I'm here to disrupt in the most grace-filled way. And I have found, Ben, that disruption and disturbing people, again, some people are shock jocks. That's not what I'm trying to be, but disrupting people and their, you know, their norm is the way to growth, and people are finding freedom because of that. And I'm addicted to it now.
It's interesting that you say this, and I want to dive into that a bit, because Father Richard Rohr has a quote where, and I think it's come up with his in his center, but it says that humans, without judgment, this does not come from a place, but humans in studies prefer a comfortable and simple lie compared to a complex truth.
Wow.
And so if you're sitting there saying, I want to disrupt it, like I want people to see afresh, what you're really saying is like, hey, I want people to see truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yet,
I imagine that's in your, if that's been your pursuit, it's been difficult, especially if the human mind really does want to be lied to, as long as it's comfortable and simple.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, I need somebody to be me to me. Like I am very comfortable in my, you know, what would you call them? Little lies or whatever Richard Rohr says, like simple. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I am very comfortable in those things. And, you know, it takes me, like purposely searching and chasing after those disruptions, right? Like, so for me, that's therapy. That, like, for me, that's my therapist disturbing very quietly, very kindly. They drop truth bombs on me once a week. And I'm like, you know, and I grow and I grow and I grow. And so, you know, it's hard, but I'll tell you what, Ben, it wasn't until early 2020 when I really started doing that. Like, you know, I've been in the, you know, writing books and speaking in front of crowds and audiences. And I feel like before 2020, people liked me to come because I made them laugh and it felt good. And since early 2020, most of the places I'm going, they're asking me to talk about really complicated, hard things, but in a grace-filled way, and disrupting people's perception of maybe what they believe is truth. Now, I'm not necessarily coming in to try to teach people my truth, right? Like that's one thing. I mean, you could do that. I'm more into having people kind of discover their own and open themselves up to going like, well, maybe the way I've been thinking isn't what I should be thinking. And I love that. I don't care if it's left, right, black, white, you know, Catholic, Christian, atheist. I just want everybody to think hard about why it is they think about what they're thinking and hold it up to the light and maybe say, hey, maybe I've been doing this a little bit differently, or maybe I've been doing this inadequately or wrong. And the way Carlos is making me look at something new, I see it a new way. And man, there's nothing better than a DM from somebody going like, I've been this way forever. You said this, I looked at it this way, and suddenly I'm this way. Man, it's the best.
It's so hard for any of us to get there.
Oh,
you know, I mean, yeah. I prefer safety and comfort, but I could speak to why I have no longer leaned on comfort, because it's never helped me grow. But
right.
For you, as you are kind of the conduit that helps people take the posture of being like, maybe I don't know this the way I thought I did.
Yeah.
One, what responsibilities that hold? And then two, what's the advantage for somebody out there listening or that heard you talk, or for yourself to even consider maybe changing your mind?
Yeah. Ooh, you know, I think that the advantage is growing in our humanity, you know, like, I can't imagine ever thinking that I've arrived. I can't imagine ever thinking that I know it. And like, I decided that I'm going to be a lifelong student. When I'm 95, God willing, I'm hoping that I'm learning something new, that I'm continuing to evolve in my humanity. And because that's just, what a way to live. You know, I'm constantly trying to be curious. I'm constantly trying to learn something new. And there is something life-giving about that. You know, there is statistics that show that men that turn 65 and retire, okay, that within 5 years, it was some massive percentage of them have heart attacks and die. And then women who retire, that doesn't happen. And the question is, well, why? Well, I honestly believe because, you know, it's just shown that when men lose their identity, when they stop working and learning. And that's just something that women just don't do. Like, they continue to evolve, they continue to learn. So I see statistics like that and I think, why would anybody want to stop growing in who they are? Stop learning. Just because you retire doesn't mean that you stop growing as a human. You know, continue to go because that's what we were built to do. That's what we were created to be. And so, you know, for me, I've never felt more alive than when I am shifting and changing. And I'm not talking about like major life shifting, you know, opinion changes on a weekly basis. That's not what I'm talking about. Like, we all have our ethos. We all have the thing, the direction that we feel called to. But even if it is a 2-degree shift, right? Like, so say it's a boat, right? And you're going the same direction. You just shift 2 degrees. It may not feel like in a month that you've even gone anywhere. But over 10 years, that 2-degree shift is going to, you're going to be hundreds of miles away from where you would have been had you been going straight in the first place. So that's all I'm trying for people to do, is to like shift 2 degrees, because 2 degrees over 10 years is going to have you end up in a completely different space than if you never would have shifted at all.
How much of this is, how much have you seen where somebody has shifted that 2 degrees? Because they're curious, they're interested, they recognize and you said it even before we got started, and I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but people look at you and they see you on stage and they think, oh, he has it all together. Like, Carlos gets it. Like, yeah. He's there. He has arrived. And what you're saying is you haven't. Like, there's still things you don't know. There's still things you're figuring out. And so if you shift that 2 degrees, you're admitting that you don't know. And one piece of the foundation, one piece of the brick of the building is taken away. And once one's taken away, I found it easy in my life for then multiple of them to fall down. And I've seen it be a really big benefit to my life, but I've also seen it to be really scary. At times isolating, at times feeling like everything's falling down around me. Have you experienced that? And if so, like, what advice would you give in those moments?
I'm a man of faith. And like, without that, I feel like if I were to like attack this disturbing and disrupting my life for the sake of me seeing things fresh again, without some semblance of centering, I would be a, you know, unmitigated disaster. Like there would be no, but since I do have my faith as my, you know, center, I feel like when things do begin to crumble, right, I've got something to catch me. I've got that thing. Now, what I have found fascinating is, you know, even in my world, say like I'm in the Christian space or whatever, and a lot of my friends are what they call, you know, they're calling deconstructing their faith, right? They're in a place where they are pulling the bricks out, Ben. They're like, you know, oh crap, they pulled one down. The whole thing fell apart. And now they're left with, what in the world do I do? You know, like how in the world, and this has happened to me even in my faith. Like, I pulled a brick out that I was like, oh, I wonder if this brick even belongs here. And bam, the whole church thing fell apart. And I'm like, what do I do? I'm here to say that, man, I view those moments as, what a fresh place to start. You know, sometimes people say they're deconstructing their view of the church or of religion, but it's like, maybe it's not. Maybe you're just taking apart your view of like what the 1900s have created into a church, when that's not even like biblical, but instead you're deconstructing that so that you can have a fresh take on your faith, you know? And this isn't just fake, man, or faith. This is, you know, politics. Like, for me, like, I grew up a very with very staunch viewpoints that my parents raised me in. And suddenly I find myself in a different space. Now, where this gets dangerous for us is when we place our identity, when these bricks that we're pulling apart, we place our identity in viewpoints. Like, you should never place your identity in a viewpoint. Because guess what? My kids who I'm raising could very easily, they're 17 and 19 now, come across a different worldview than I have. And what I'm not going to allow that to do is completely crumble my relationship with who they are, just because, say, in 4 years when they're old enough to vote, they vote for somebody differently than I do. I've seen far too many people in 2020 have their entire lives collapse because they placed their identity in something that their identity shouldn't be placed in. So that when all these things are falling apart, man, it's a mess. And that's where people have That's the pain point right now for everybody, is like, nobody knows how to be human anymore. Nobody knows how to actually coexist with people who suddenly their buildings, their bricks are, well, continue with the analogy we're talking about with the word picture, but their structures are falling apart because they pulled a brick out. And you've always known them as whatever this is that they've built, whatever structure they've built around their lives and their worldview. Suddenly their worldview is different, and you no longer as a human know how to have a conversation or even be in relationship with that person. And I'm like, we should never be having a relationship with the structure around somebody's life. We should always be having a relationship with the person's life. And when the structure falls apart, guess what? The person's still there and we can still have those relationships. So that's kind of where I'm sitting.
So then when it comes to faith, what do you hold on to? You know, because this is a faith-based podcast, but one of the beautiful things that I've wanted to do is explore the ideas of a bunch of different faith traditions to figure out if there is a common thread, and just have story time. But when all the stuff starts to fall down and politics gets divisive and neighbors yell at neighbors who you've been neighbors with for 10 years and all of a sudden there's some controversial issue that stands in the way of your relationship, when kids are no longer agreeing with their parents and they're getting pushed out of the home and all these things are happening and you're watching it go down. I mean, each one of those instances I just said, I've come in contact with this week.
Yeah.
Like not over the last year, like right. This week I've heard stories right. of this. And like that's I'm unfamiliar with these moments because this wasn't happening two right. years ago, at least as often. There were stories of, so okay, especially when it comes to faith, and I would love to kind of walk through each of these things to figure out what's important. When stuff starts to fall down, you said there's something there holding you up. What is it?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, very specifically, it is the person and the spirit of Jesus Christ. I mean, that's it for me. So like there has been so many religions based on even this figure, right? On Jesus. And there's been religions and forms of religions that have been based off. And so like what I have to do is like strip every facet of religion away from who Jesus is, like all of it, like evangelicalism, you know, whatever it may be, Protestants, Catholics, strip it all. And at the base of it, it's just Jesus. Like it's just this man who somehow has convinced me that he's God, right? That already, that sounds asinine. That sounds like the craziest thing ever, right? But I'm so into this dude. And when I strip everything down to just him, that is it for me. So what is that, right? So like, what are the things? So then what I've got to do is study his life. And what do I see in his life? Well, what does he say is going to be the things that should define us in our faith? I'll tell you what they are very easily. There's probably a song you learned in third grade with these. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. That is it. There's your roadmap, right? So you start watching Fox News or CNN and you feel your blood pressure rising and you want to start sending articles on Facebook to your aunt who believes this. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. There it is. Like if it's not that, then for me, I can't be part of it. If it's not, I can still hold opinions on divisive topics. But as I communicate to people, if those nine words are not the basis of my communication, the basis on how I'm a human, then guess what? It's not going to work. Like it just isn't. And so for being a faith-based guy, I'm constantly, you know, like I just see it every day on Twitter or on Instagram. I'm like, people, how in the world are you trying to communicate and quote unquote be Christians when these nine words are nowhere to be found in how you're delivering your opinion? I say this all the time, Ben. Don't stand on issues, but walk with people. And those nine words are all about walking with people. You can have an opinion on an issue, but don't stand on an issue. You walk with people. So when people ask me all the time, well, Carlos, you're an author, you're a whatever, people know you, you need to tell us what your stance on this issue. And I always tell them, no, I don't have a stance on an issue, but I guess what? I have a stance on humans that probably are being affected by that issue. So I'm going to walk with those people and stand with issues, don't stand on issues, but walk with people is kind of how I take the fruit of the spirit, which we just talked about, and put it into practice.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drank is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways. And like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee. If your relationship with people had the same foundation and a brick gets taken away because now all of a sudden you're questioning people, now all of a sudden people have hurt you, but yet there's something still there pulling you back to care for people well, why?
Ooh, and this all goes back to story and my story, because I know, Ben, that I am a hypocritical, lying mess of a human being. Like, I am the worst of the worst. Like Paul says it, you know, that I mean, like, I am the worst. There is no other human that is worth any less, right, than I am. So like, I know my depravity. I know what I'm capable of. And now that I've done the work, now that I've like based everything I do on the fruit of the Spirit, on how Jesus walked, I don't see anybody that comes at me and attacks me and hurts me for the wounding that they're doing. I don't. And it's probably because all the therapy I've done, and I've done probably more than I should, but I now see people as their wounds, right? So like the reason why somebody would attack me over a certain issue is because there is truth to what they're screaming about to them. And there's a pain point for them. So if somebody's like, Carlos, I can't believe you voted for this person because that person stands for this. Well, guess what? If I dig down into their story a little bit, just a little bit, and this is the walking with people piece. If I walk with them, I promise you, I'm going to find something so painful in them that I can suddenly now surround that. And that is now the topic of conversation, not the bigger one that they wanted the conversation to be about. They wanted it to be about a politician. No, I want it to be about their heart. What is it in their heart that is in so much pain that is causing this anger to come at me? You get to that place, man. We start trying to get to that place inside of people's stories. I'm telling you, man, that's when like the true sense of revival, and that's really the healing that's going to need to happen. Right now, you know, we go from me, which is all about us, individualism, to we, which is very tribalistic in the human view. And where we need to get to, we need to go from me to we to everybody. Suddenly, like when we start viewing humanity and everybody around us like in the same place as we are, as opposed to just like our tribalistic views, that's how Jesus did it. Like, he never came across somebody that was an enemy. He never came across somebody that he looked at and thought was less than. No, like, we're all in this together. This is an everybody thing. So for me, very specifically, I always go to the heart and the pain point of that frustration. And I promise you, it is never, ever, ever going to be whatever it is they're starting with. It is always one or two layers deep. You're going to find a father wound. You're going to find a childhood wound. You're going to find something that has happened to them that you can now. And for me, I get very specific. I pray healing over those things for them. I find out what it is. And 9 out of 10 people that have come at me in DMs. So say, I talk a lot about race. I talk a lot about, racial injustice on my Instagram. And when people angrily come at me in my DMs, I do the same thing. I don't ever DM them back like with my thumbs. I send them a video, and they're never expecting a video. They're never expecting to open it up and see my eyes. But I look at them face to face. I'm like, hey, I hear everything you just said. I just need you to know that like I'm for you, like for you. And I just need you to know that like I want to help you. This issue has nothing. I want your heart to be good. And then it takes one or two conversations. These people are now my best friends, not my worst enemies. Why? Because they know I care about their heart. That's all people want. People want to be seen. They want to be cared for. And, the way to not do it is with our thumbs on a phone. The way to do it, you know, is eye to eye. And so, man, you got me fired up. But that's really what why I do what I do, why I do the work. That because everybody has a story, everybody has a wound, and everybody deserves healing.
I imagine within those moments as well, Because when I'm not doing that in my own life, and I'm reactionary, I lose the sight of hope when it comes to people. You know, I lose the sight of a better tomorrow or any type of healing and progress because I'm stuck in my own bubble. I'm dealing with my own pains. I'm imagining when you have these conversations, there's a lot of hope that circles around them. There's a lot of freedom that exists when that wall is broken down and the conversation begins.
Oh my gosh, dude. I mean, when people think that you're their enemy and in 1 second it smacks them across the face that not only are you not their enemy, but you are more on their side than probably most people in their life are, like that ground swell of emotion that comes up in them. I've seen people in a moment burst into tears. You know, I people want to be seen. They, you know, not only want to be heard, but they want to be seen and they want you to see their pain. And so for all the hot button topics that are out there, right? Again, don't stand on issues, walk with people, not to be controversial, but let's take two sides of the same coin. Okay. And we'll just rewind a little bit because it's gotten a little less heated these days, but rewind back to like a Black Lives Matter march / defund the police / Blue Lives Matter, look back the police. So this is what I always told people. If you are a Black Lives Matter activist, these are friends of mine, and you are not in heart relationship with the law enforcement officer, it can be a Black law enforcement, I don't care what it is, but if you're not in relationship with the law enforcement officer in some way, shape, or form, guess what? You can't do what I'm asking. You cannot not stand on issues but walk with people. Standing on an issue is not having a relationship with somebody. Same thing on the flip side. If you are a back the police, Blue Lives Matter, you know, Black Lives Matter is Marxist, socialist, yada, 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 but you're not in relationship with a person that would go to a Black Lives Matter march and hold up a sign, guess what? You're doing exactly what I'm saying to not do. You are standing on issues. You're not walking with people. So both sides of the coin, whatever it may be, we must make sure that we are in relationship, in heart relationship with people that don't see the same way we do, because what that's going to do is break down the walls and allow them to see you as a human. And suddenly it is in no way, shape, or form as divisive or hot topic or heated as it is. The problem is, you know, we've forgotten how to be human. We've forgotten what it's like to actually be in relationships. And that, you know, it's statistics show us, I just learned this last week, that the next great public health crisis in America is going to be lack of friendships. The lack of friendships that people have is going to cause more death and already than heart disease, than cancer, than all of these things, because we were created to be connected, but we are having less and less and less connections. And that's what we need. That's what's going to heal us.
You have a quote that you mentioned in your book, your promo video for your book, I guess I should say,
yeah,
that I think speaks this well. I found it really, really incredible. I want to hear your thoughts on it. You talk about how when the volume of life increases, I don't know if your exact words, but you can maybe correct me on this. I think it said then the volume that we can hear God decreases. Not that God's volume has decreased, but the volume at which we can hear God and work alongside of God maybe decreases. I'm imagining a lot of that statement comes into play as we are standing on issues and not walking with people. We're just yelling and screaming, man, and life's swirling around us and new issues are coming up and we're disoriented and we're confused and now we're angry and we're hurt. So the volume gets louder and louder and we get more confused. And in the meantime, years go by and we don't even know where God was at all. Can you speak to us a little bit about that statement?
Yeah. Lower the volume of life and the volume of God goes up. And we don't know how to do that anymore. You know, we don't, you know, and I don't want to blame anything, but, you know, we can, again, blame the devices that we're probably listening to mine and your podcast on, right? We are constantly consuming information that we were never created to consume what we're consuming. And now we're talking about consuming like divisive things. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about anything. It could be good news. We weren't created to consume what we consume. So suddenly we wonder why we can't connect emotionally with other humans that have differing opinions than us. I mean, we can't even connect with people that have the same opinions with us anymore because the volume of life is so loud, right? I mean, look in scripture, look at Exodus. We see the Israelites. This is my favorite lower the volume of life story in the Bible. You got the Israelites are fleeing the Egyptian army after, you know, hundreds of years of slavery. You got Moses has rescued them. They're running as fast as they can. They get to the edge of the Red Sea and they start to freak out. They're like, crap. They look behind. They're like, the Egyptian army's coming after us, bro. What are we doing? And it says that they start yelling at Moses, you should have left us to be slaves in Egypt. We would have stayed and served the Egyptians, but now we're going to die in the desert. There were plenty of graves for us in Egypt. And I love it because they're freaking out. And this is what he tells them. He goes, stand still. Like, shut up. Stop talking. Stop screaming. He said, stand still and you'll see the Lord rescue today. And what happens? When they stood still, when they lowered the volume of life, what did he do? He was able to grab that staff, stick it in the sand, that sea split wide open, and they walked to the promised land. And I tell people all the time, how many of us are missing our promised land because we're so consumed with all of this noise and all the chaos of the world? And like, you're like, why isn't God answering me? Why? And it's like, no, God is answering you. You just can't hear him. Like life is so loud. And so for me, it really is a very practical thing for me on a daily basis. People watch me on Instagram and probably think that, you know, I'm the loudest Enneagram 7 ever. I have so much rest and pause and silence in my life that I purposely built in because I know that I can't do the work that I'm doing. I can't have the discussions, grace-filled conversations about hard topics with people unless I'm hearing the voice of God on a daily basis, which means I've got to lower the volume of life. And the volume of God goes up. And of course, there's practical, tactical ways to do that. But whatever it is that you do, I promise you, the lower the volume your life gets, the louder the booming voice of God will get. And when that voice is loud in your life, you're going to start walking with some swagger and some confidence that you didn't even know that you had.
The book I'm talking about is called Enter Wild. It came out June of 2020. Carlos Whitaker. Final question for you, buddy. This is awesome. You're incredible. You always have been. Big fan of you, and I'm glad you joined Hope Still Wins. We ask everybody this same question. Take as long as you want or as short as you want to answer it. But Carlos, do you believe that Hope Still Wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I believe that Hope Still Wins because I see it every day. Like I see that people are desperate for hope. I mean, it's why you've named, I would assume, your podcast Hope Still Wins, because you believe that hope still wins. At the end of the day, what people are hoping for, and this is what I think is beautiful, okay? So many people that follow me, they're not of the same faith background as me. They don't believe what I believe faith-wise. But they always, you know, they'll share things like, oh, like I followed this guy, Atlos Witt. Like, it's kind of weird I follow him because I don't believe in his religion. I don't believe in, but he's just a good human. People would say things like this. And I'm like, actually, like what they don't know is that what they see in me is Jesus. Like it is the presence, the palpable presence of Holy Spirit in Jesus. And so that is how I know every day that hope still wins is that if they knew me, if they were actually seeing me, they would run as fast as they could away from me. But what I know they're seeing is the presence of Holy Spirit in my life. And when I'm walking step by step with him, that is when I know that hope still wins, bro, because I see it every day. I'm seeing witches read books about Jesus because they're like, I don't know about you, Jesus, but I trust you. And why do they trust me? Well, they don't know. They trust me because Holy Spirit is in me. I'm trying to walk step by step the way he did. And so I'm so hope filled, man. Like I'm not one of the ones that are thinking, man, we're just getting further and further apart. Nah, you know, maybe the loud voices are trying to tell us that we're being further and further apart. But in conversations that I'm having every single day, I think we're getting closer and closer together. And I think that, I think that we're ripe for revival. I think that humanity is ready for unification. And so I'm like, well, let me be one of the guys. Let me go right alongside Ben, lock arms with him and say, hey guys, there's hope, and people are going to sprint to hope a lot faster than they're going to sprint to the opposite of hope. And right now the media and everybody's trying to give everyone the opposite of hope. And I'm telling you, people are desperate for the words that you're speaking into this world, the conversations that you're having. And so I'm grateful to just be a small part of that today.
Carlos Whitaker, you're the man. We'll talk soon. Thanks again for joining this episode of Hope Still Wins.
Thanks, bro.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. And lastly, if this conversation resonated with you, if you believe it would give one of your loved ones fresh eyes and a dose of hope for their week, please share it with them. It's super easy to share. It would mean the world to the team and I believe it could be a blessing to your friendship and your families as well. All right. Well, hey, friends, that's it for today. That's it for this week. Have a great week. Enjoy yourself. Share a little hope. Maybe share this podcast. I don't know. Thank you again for tuning in to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and we'll be talking next week. I'll hear you here.